When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On this episode of the No Chill Podcast, we hit the rewind button and travel back to the Showtime era. One of the essential members of that iconic squad, five-time champion and eight-time all-defensive teamer, Michael Cooper, takes us through exactly what made that team so special. Looking at the impact their style of play had on the game, we can appreciate how so much of the modern era was influenced by Showtime. For Gil, it was the substance and the strategy that Pat Riley unleashed with Magic at the point. Not only did Magic revolutionize the position, his rivalry with Larry Bird in Boston defined the era. As Coop tells us, the Celtics were the ultimate opponent, and the dynasty was only successful because everyone on the team bought in and supported each other. It truly was a special chapter in NBA history, and as we see where the game has come from the Showtime roots, you should appreciate it even more. It's the No Chill Podcast, Showtime edition. It's always Showtime on No Chill, and that's what keeps you coming back. Remember, you can get every episode as soon as they drop by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts, especially on the No Chill channel on YouTube. And don't forget, every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, it's No Chill with Gilbert Arenas on the Fubo Sports Network. Welcome to No Chill with Gilbert Arenas. That's Gilbert Arenas over there. Apologies already, I'm wearing a green hoodie. Shout out to our guy, Los Angeles. But Gil, I'm going to say the dad joke of the year. It's Showtime. We got, boom, Michael Cooper here from the Showtime Lakers. Welcome to No Chill. I'm sorry, I can't. I'm in the doghouse. I can't even give you that because
you got that green sweatshirt on. I'm seeing you as a Boston Celtic player.
The rivalry, serious. But all right, well.
Well, thank you for
having me. Is that over with? Am I good now?
Well, you okay?
I got to prove myself. All right, cool. Well, we're glad to have you here because Gil, he turned on his era. I'm calling him out for that right now.
I turned on my era.
You turned on your era. That's just something you don't do. He's going with the young wave.
I go with evolution.
I go with Darwin's theory.
But you gotta be a champion for your era. That's what it's about.
Well, I think, again, as a former basketball player, as Gil and I are, is I think you just look at basketball as a whole, and I try not to take it in errors. But the one thing I like to think about the 80s is that if you go back to the 70s, basketball was kind of like watching paint dry. It was boring. You had some great players, Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, Chamberlain. And I think Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, they changed the course of basketball to what it is today, and that happened in the 80s. So when I look at basketball like that, I'm very happy and proud that I was playing in that era, but I still see it as a whole, and the evolution that we come to today was set in stone in 1980.
You take pride in your era.
That's what it is. Look what happened. You have an 80s player that looks at the 70s, and says, like, watching paint dry.
Right, he takes pride in his era. He's taking pride in the 80s.
Because you gotta remember, 80s evolves, becomes faster, stronger, smarter than the previous one. And that's where my arguments always come in. I was like, hold on. If you ask the era to look at the era before it, they're gonna say that era was boring because they adapted. They learned. It became evolution, and that's why I always say, you know what? Instead of being stuck in early 2000s, I just go forward and just say I gotta appreciate where the game has gone because it's moved because of the eras. You know, the guys are just watching, learning, adapting, putting their own little twist on it. Someone else watches it, learn it, adapt it, put their little twist on it. This is what we have now here.
And players are getting bigger, stronger, faster, quicker. And I think that's the game because I think you have players like LeBron for this era right now that we're in. Could he have played in the 80s? Could he have played in the 70s? Probably only a few could have done that. But there's not a lot of players that could have played or go back in the throwback era back then. I think as you see younger players coming off the bench today. Nurkovic, could he have played back in the 80s? I don't think so. I think it was a little bit too physical. But again, that's the fun part about basketball. And as we go forward in 2030, 2035, if I'm still around then, you know, you're going to see a different kind of basketball player back then. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's flip it. Could Magic play today?
Oh, yeah. There are certain players that could play in this game today. I think.
Of course, you're going to say that.
No, I'm saying Gilbert Arenas.
Yeah. I'll agree that, you know, you like a Magic, got to remember, still to this day, they don't have 6'9 point guards running off. So, yes, he was the evolution, but you can't make arguments off special.
Yeah.
The specialty player.
Yeah, he was exception to the rule. Actually.
You know, even like somebody like Penny, you're still talking about, you know, 6'7 point guard with a 42-inch vertical. That those guys are just, you can just, because they don't make them. You know, so it's hard to, when you make arguments, it's like certain players, you just got to leave out an argument because...
How about a 6'5 lockdown defender?
I definitely could play in today's game. But let's go back a little bit. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I think he flourishes in today's game. A player that I think doesn't flourish is Bill Russell. I think he has a hard time in today's game. Although he's a great player, and I think he could play in certain portions of his game. But now, Bill is used to running back to the paint, guarding his player on the block. Now, that big is stepping out to a three-point line. You got to get out there on him.
Well, this comes back to is what I want to get into is personnel. And it also takes a team that can shift that. That's what the Showtime Lakers were. They had the personnel that came together at the right time. And Showtime Lakers defined that era and moved basketball forward.
Well, I think, again, going back to the 60s and watching the way it was played, moving to the 70s, and then coming Dr. Buss buying the Los Angeles Lakers, and his whole vision for not just the Lakers but for the NBA basketball was to entertain the entertainers. Mm-hmm. That was our role. And obviously Magic Johnson played a big role in that. So he wanted an up-tempo. He didn't want to watch basketball being walked up the floor, throwing the paint, foul, whatever. He wanted to see the game going fast. And that's where Showtime evolved.
Entertain the entertainers.
You got to remember, we're living in Hollywood. So yeah, movie stars, actors, and everything going on.
But it wasn't just entertainment. Five rings. You won. So you could still entertain, but you guys were successful. That was the thing that, you know.
Well, really that was the key. Impression. That was the brand of what we wanted. That's how we were going to win. We weren't going to win playing slow down basketball, half court basketball. We were going to win by getting up and down the floor. And what greatest conductor we could have would be Magic Johnson. And you surround him with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, James Worthy, Jamal Wilkes, Norm Nixon, players like that. That's when we become a very good basketball team.
Now, if you put your team in just a half-court offense and just say you can only run half-court, are you still five-time champions?
Yep. Only four. We had the player with the greatest unstoppable shot. That's all we did. We had a play called fist up. And whenever we ran fist up, that was going into Kareem. Every team knew it. We throw it into him. What are they going to do?
But doesn't that take away the other four players that were athletes, super fast, fast brain guys, it takes away you guys.
Oh, for sure. And I think what it would have done, it would have made us better perimeter shooters because you throw it in the Kareem, the defense going to have to do something. No one can one-on-one can guard Kareem by himself. So the double team was going to happen. And Kareem was a willing passer. So Michael Cooper had to get his feet lined up and work on my jumper. Magic, we worked on my three-point shot. That's why in 1987, that was a big year for us. But you know, we would have won. It wouldn't have been as easy, but I think we still would have won our share.
See, and that used to be my argument. Says you have to adjust your scheme around the talent.
Yep.
Because if you have guys who can get up and down that floor with ease, you hurt them by putting them in traffic. Mm-hmm. Unless you have a traffic player, but for the most part, you hurt them by putting them in traffic. You need everybody playing at their extreme best. So, you know, I'm in LA, you know, and I see, you know, Showtime. That's all it was, Showtime. So that's how we played.
But, Gil, you have to look at this. And just to that exact point. You look at the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics were a half-court team, mm-hmm. and they flourished well in a half-court team. I think the Philadelphia 76ers back then, Moses Malone, Dr. J, the group that they had, they were a half-court running team. So you had a lot of teams that were could fluctuate between going fast to slow. Detroit Pistons, mm-hmm. just a brutal half-court team. So I think what makes great teams are excellent coaches that work with the players and the team that they have. Pat Riley was ambassador of that. I mean, he knew we were running team. He goes, and when Pat Riley leaves L.A., he goes to Miami. He gets LeBron, Dwayne, the slowdown team. So he coached that team to win championships. So it goes to what you're saying.
I got to recognize something that he just said because he went back on something he's always, you watched. You just said you grew up in L.A. and you watched the Showtime Lakers. Last week he said, I need to watch.
No. Kevin, I remember when you're growing up in the 80s, 90s, there's only you're forced to watch two teams. you're forced to watch two teams.
I just want to prove you said you watched.
No, back then, I remember it's Showtime in Boston. That's all you knew.
Yep.
If you was in LA, you was a Laker fan. You know, you Boston, you're East Coast, so that it was automatically a rivalry. So you understood if Lakers can score this many, their chances of losing. Zero. If they put him in a half court, this team, you know, chances of winning is a little bit better. Like you knew that growing up watching. Like, okay, we just got to get it out there.
Let me say, add to that, Gil. You look at that West Coast LA, East Coast Boston. Now the teams in between, and I've had the family members and friends that lived in Philadelphia. The Sixers weren't in it. They had to pick a team. And it was the Lakers, you know. So that's the fun part about this is that, you know, we hopefully were going to be there at the end. And all those teams in the middle, who were they watching? Yeah. So it wasn't a matter of where you being from Los Angeles. It's whatever. I think we were the kind of like favorite team because of who we were.
I used to do my research because there was I used to tell my Eddie Jordan who played.
Ooh, loved Eddie.
Eddie. So me and Eddie used to, you know, have our conversations. And I used to say, what is the benefit of a pure point guard, right? He says, to get the team better. I said, well, if the point guard has to get everyone better, that means they're not that good. Because if he's doing his job, that means these players aren't that good and they can't do it on themselves. So I said, you know what? I'm doing research. I'm going to do the research to see how many championships come from the point guard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Magic Johnson ruined what a pure point guard was because he is himself. He is a 6'9", 1, 3, 4, 5 player. And you build this expectations off of him and you run it down the rest of the group.
Yep.
So when people say, we need a pure point guard to run this team, wait, hold on. You can't keep using Magic Johnson as that guy to run your theory because he's in his own category.
Magic was a freak of nature. Because again, there's this guy here who played all five positions. I got a chance to be with this young man from a rookie. I saw him become just an average player when he came in. Magic didn't really have a jump shot. He had a set shot. He worked on his game, became an all-pro, became an all-star, became a legendary player. And the fun part I say about him and James Worthy, Kareem was already there, but those two players, I actually saw them every single day work to become Hall of Fame players. And as Gil said, you can't use Magic Johnson for that because a true point guard would be like Allen Iverson, somebody that can score. Well, Allen wasn't about making other players better. But the reason Magic could do it because Magic understood all the other positions. A point guard only knows what a point guard is supposed to do. I'll pass it or I'll shoot it. But no, you don't understand that unless you have played those other positions. And that's what made Magic Magic.
Yeah, so I stopped all everything from Magic.
Yep.
I said, from Magic on, because Magic had point guards with him. He was just a better one. I said, he had guards that said, hey, you play defense or you score. I'll do all this other stuff. You guys just be guards right now. You take him out and then go forward. The starting point guard on championships teams averaged 4.2 assists a game. So I'm like, well, then that guard isn't the dominant player on the team. So the John Stocktons couldn't win because if you're doing what you do, that means he ain't that good. So if we stop you, he can't survive. And that's what the research showed. So like, you can technically look at a roster now. You can look at a roster, every guard that averages 9 assists, 10 assists, you take them out of championship pool. You can take them out of the championship pool and then focus on just a certain group of teams just because of their point guard dominance.
You know what, Mike?
listen, I've known Gilbert Arenas a long time, more personally last year or so, but I've always been admiring a big fan of his over the years. But I'm in awe of this young man right now because people that really do that kind of thing and they get into basketball, those are people that you want to play with. Mm-hmm. I would love to have played with Gilbert. Now, he wasn't a good passer.
You wouldn't have got the ball yet.
Yeah, but you know what? My position and my role on the team, I didn't require the ball. Mm-hmm. Every now and then. Only when he got double teamed, he'd throw it to me and I could do something with it. But to hear Gilbert talk about the game the way it is today shows you somebody who has matured over the years, watched this game, enjoyed this game, and really learned from this game of basketball. And like I said, I'm in awe of you, man. Remember, I really am.
We had to. Yeah. You remember, we got to.
Didn't even say thank you, man. Come on.
I did. I said thank you. We had to.
Point guards don't say thank you. They just nod at you. There you go.
We had to, like, you know, coming from the Valley, you know, learning the game. I had to figure out what made everyone great. Everyone was great before they got to where they are. Why did you, it's like, why is he sacrificing his offense for his defense, right? Because you had to do that.
Yep.
You know, why is he sacrificing for that? Okay, and you're trying to figure out to make it make sense. Because, you know, you got this offensive guy who's dominant, and then he gets on his team, and he becomes a defensive player. I need to know the reason. What does he see that I don't see? And that is a rabbit hole that I had to go down growing up, trying to figure out why are the players doing this? Why is this guy doing it? Norm Nixon, why would you get rid of Norm Nixon? And he averages 10 assists and Magic averages 9. You know, the offense runs a little bit better when he's there, so they can get rid of it. And I'm sitting here trying to, you're trying to build teams. Because it's like, growing up, you're on a video game, okay, I want Shaq, I want Ewing, because in the video games it makes sense, but not realizing, they both want the right block. So that doesn't make sense, because if he's on the right block, where does the other one go? Pointless on the left block, and he don't know how to play on the left block. So he's a useless player if I got this player. And that's, that's where the research started coming from and trying to understand the game to learn how to survive in the game.
That's amazing because, Gil, I didn't know that you were from the Valley out here. Mm-hmm. I'm from Pasadena, California. Okay. So all I knew was San Gabriel Valley and playing basketball there. And as I became 16, 17, I started venturing to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the late 70s, early 80s, you had the Joe Weekly Summer League. Mm-hmm. And Joe Weekly played at Crenshaw High School. And my first experience over there was playing against David Greenwood, Roy Hamilton, Marcus Johnson, just to name a few of some of the greatest players ever played here. So I kind of feel like you said, you're out in the Valley and nobody knows you're out there. I'm from San Diego. I didn't know. Nobody knew me. But when you came to L.A., that's when you got recognized for your talent and playing basketball.
Yeah, and before you got here we can let the audience know that Gilbert was late with the star of the show, had to be here. So we talked for a while before you got here. And
we got to let Gilbert know champions are on time all the time.
You were early, actually. Yeah, if you're not, what's the expression? If you're not early, you're late.
Yeah.
So I was saying that you were a guy that made a name for yourself in the Valley. And Coop said no one knew who you were unless you played in L.A. You had to come to L.A.
And that was the truth. Like, I didn't get my name. I didn't really get established until I played Crenshaw.
Yep.
We played Crenshaw in the playoffs, and I got like 40-something in 3 quarters. After that game, everybody's like, the kid from the Valley can play.
Exactly, yep.
Because at first, these stats didn't mean nothing to them. Like, if he ain't playing against no competition, we don't care about him. You know what I mean? So that is true. You got to remember, L.A. then was where all Hoopers came from.
It was the hub of
basketball here.
And you had Crenshaw, Manual Arts, Fremont. You had all the great schools out here with great players. Freeman Williams, another great player. Raymond Lewis.
another great player. So when you came to LA and you kind of like made your niche there, you can go back to the boonies, but somebody knows that you can play basketball. Yeah.
Now, how do you think about this? The perception of Showtime and the style of play was so flashy, so many highlights, so much up-tempo, but there was a lot of substance to it. So how much of it was what Pat instilled in you guys, which was actual structure, what he had in sets, and how much was freestyle?
You know what? Gilbert makes a great point. We came from all around the country. Magic from Michigan, Kareem's New York, but he's out here in UCLA, Jamal Wilkes. And I think the one thing Pat Riley allowed us to do within the framework of Showtime was to be yourself, to be identified for yourself. It's hard to lock down the sky hook. It's hard to lock down Magic's no-look pass. It's hard to lock down Jamal's weird jump shot that he shot. It's hard to lock down Norm Nix's speed, Worthy. So within that, we were able to do our thing, but Pat Riley said, you're only going to win as a team. And what does team mean? Together, everyone achieves more. And when you're thinking that way, yeah, I can have my little flash for a moment, but I got to come back in because we got to win as a team. And anytime we got into crunch time, playing against the Celtics, the Pistons, the Sixers, we flashed through the game. But when it came to winning time, and there's a point in that for 2 minutes or 3 minutes, you locked down and you did things as a team. And Pat Riley was masterful at that.
There's one thing that I question myself on, and I can't come up with the answer. Was the 80s and 90s players smarter? I ask that as, were they smarter because they knew how to sacrifice and who to sacrifice for?
I think this, Gil. I think if you look at the players that came out at that time, unlike today's players, when a kid goes from high school to college, when they go to Kentucky, they ain't looking but 1 year. They trying to get their game on so they can come into the NBA. Kareem went 4 years of college. Jamal Wilkes went 4 years of college. Magic's the only one that didn't. Worthy went 4 years. So we had an understanding of how the coaches could coach us the fundamentals of the game because they had a kid that was going to be there for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And that's how you learn the game of basketball. And that's what I tell kids today. Don't be lured by the money because the only way you have longevity in the NBA is if you know how to play the game from the ground up. Again, as you lose speed, and one thing I always say about the great ones, Kobe Bryant, Magic, Michael Jordan, just to name the three, them players were good. Michael was exciting. He was eye candy, going to the basket with his tongue hanging out, same thing with Kobe. But when did they really become that legendary player? Is when they lost a little bit of the athleticism and Michael Jordan started posting your ass up. Kobe started backing you down to get them easy shots. Magic started shooting a junior sky hook. That's when a player really evolves and becomes who they are. And that's what I tell kids, stay in school as long as you can. If you got a good coach, stay in school and learn from them because that's where you learn how to stay in the NBA for 14, 15, 16 years.
But even what you're just saying about MJ, when he was at Carolina, he was given that framework and that structure from Dean Smith, which he didn't go for 40 when he was a freshman. Probably could have. But, you know, he didn't unleash that until he had the NBA, but he had the baseline that he established from
and had a great coach
Carolina.
There. That's what I'm saying. And, you know, Kobe didn't go to college at all. And you get your dad, but you have to have somebody around
really, really
you that knows the game and can put the that seeding on the ground to really make you flourish. So when you get there and you understand the game, you can stay in the game.
But then what you said about Magic is what Gil supports. When you're ready and you're ahead of the curve, go early. What do you have to wait 4 years for?
Again, we talk about massive freak of nature.
Well, I mean, nowadays, if you're ready early, which you were ready early, mm-hmm. Why wait?
I'm 6'9", man. I'm going to do everything they want. I mean, that's rare that you're going to get a player like that.
Like, I don't like stats right now.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see the stats, I say, it's all screwed. You don't.
The stats in today's game.
Yeah, you can't judge.
Did you say screwed or skewed?
Screwed.
Skewed is really the term, but.
Yeah. Because the 80s, mid 90s, when players was fighting for money, what was the incentive? If my team ain't paying me, and they're telling me I'm gonna be a free agent, and this is where I wanna be, why do I want to score 30? I'm gonna score 20, just enough for this other group to look. You know, mm-hmm. so there was, it seemed like there was more calculations to what was going on, and players wasn't showcasing for someone who didn't want them. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, so you got this guy who averaged 20, the next year he averaged 27. Like, what happened? Well, that guy was like, okay, yeah, come on over here. We're gonna take care of you. So it seems like some of you guys' stats aren't the real truth of what the player was. And that's what I'm like, okay, you know, it's one of those things that's hard because at $20 million, $30 million, you don't have to think. Mm-hmm. You just go out there and just perform.
Well, again, it goes back to, you got to remember, before, when we were playing in the 80s, TV was slowly but surely becoming a thing. So I think players were looking to make, great example, Gil. My first 2 years, 1979, I came in the league, I got hurt. 1980, my first year. Take a guess how much money I made my first year in the NBA.
But you was number three pick, so.
Oh, no, no. I was a 64th player.
In the third round.
I made $30,000 my first year. My first year. I was happy as hell with that. I was given shoes by Adidas.
Uh-huh.
And finally, by second year, I got me a little contract. Guess how much my shoe contract was? $2,500. So $2,500 was my shoe money for that year. But what we got was a lot of gear. They gave us so much gear, man. I had so much Adidas stuff. Everywhere, every time you went somewhere, the representative was there with a big bag. So what I'm saying is that for us back then, it was the passion of the game mm-hmm. to play. Magic was the first million-dollar player in a sense, and that's when I think when that happened, players now started buying, okay, well, if Magic can get that, I can get this. Mm-hmm. And then as TV exploded is when you get these big contracts. So I think it goes back to what you said as far as the play. We had to be smarter, and you were playing to stay in the league. You weren't playing for the extra money. You just wanted to stay in the league because if you stayed in the league, you were going to get paid by somebody. And once you heard that Dr. Buss from the Los Angeles Lakers was paying Magic Johnson $1 million. Oh, Utah Jazz, Houston Rockets, players started playing. Now, every time they played us, because they know that you didn't get paid on this side of town. So it was funny, man.
Every game was an audition.
That's what I said. You know, and that's why it's like I can't judge stats for what they are because you don't know. No. You don't know. I can't say, oh, he averaged a triple-double. I mean, woo.
But then again, Gil, I think now with stats, if you're getting paid $85 million, you expected to put some numbers up there, look at them stats. You got to put up 20-20 or something like that.
But the game is so fast, those stats can't be compared. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you guys shot 60 shots back then, and that was considered showtime, mm-hmm. and now there's 100 shots in a game, that's 40 extra shots. That's two times the output. So I look at it like this. Well, if Magic averaged 13, 15 assists with this many possessions, you're 10 assists with double the possessions? Fuck out of here.
Yeah.
No, I'm not rah-hawing because you averaged 12 assists. You should average 12 assists. You made 200 passes. The least you could do is have the least you could do is have 1,200 assists. Shit, I didn't pass the ball and I got 5 assists. I made 5 passes.
High percentage shots.
Yeah. Well, Gil, I expect you to pass. You put the ball in the hoop. The last thing you want to do is to see the ball go in the basket. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So whether you shoot it or you're gonna give it to me who's a 30% shooter. Uh-huh. You're going to shoot it because you know it's going to go in more than likely.
There was this point, though. You got to think about that wherever that year was, I mean, you could probably boil it all down to it. When things shifted, what you were talking about with money, when it became Magic's $1 million man, other players see that, and then things became more, I think you guys were in the era that you handed it off to, let's say, the 90s, that it was just there was more freedom, and then it became more corporate.
I think, obviously, with our play and international basketball became big then because once we were able, Michael Jordan was to take the NBA overseas and I think the Olympic team, that really opened it up a lot and it made basketball more financially successful. And I think that's where players really lost their minds then, because as they see that there was money to be given and that owners almost had to pay you because the NBA players contract had to go where certain players had to make certain money, I think that's where, to me, the NBA kind of took a downward spiral in the play. The notoriety of the league and all of that became very, very big, but I think the play went down because now players were just trying to move around to get that big money, and they weren't worried about working on their game during off season.
Do you think that 92 Olympic run changed the way, because you're playing against overseas guys who were, they wasn't physically sound, they were more, you know, fundamentally sound, I mean, skilled, they wasn't brute. Do you think that was the reason the NBA was like, let's back up off the fouling and all of that and change the game for more offense to try to adapt to?
That and the fact, because I think as you went into the 90s, Gilbert, you see the physical, I mean, we were fighting almost every night. Mm-hmm. And the referees had to cut back on that. The league wanted that. The late Mr. Stern wanted basketball to be played the right way. Mm-hmm. And I think what happened with all that physicality, I think we scared a lot of European players from coming over here because they were just playing basketball and you get a foul and foul. But now I got to come over there and play basketball and possibly fight my way out of a game.
All right, let's take a break to talk about our friends at Gabby. When it comes to car and home insurance, don't we deserve better? You know we do. I put my policy to the test and turned to Gabby. They literally stand for get a better insurance. Getting better insurance with Gabby means a better price for the same insurance coverage. Who knew something like this existed? They are the one true comparison platform with real rates. They give you an apples-to-apples comparison for your current coverage with 40 of the top insurance providers like Progressive, Nationwide, and Travelers, all in one place. Use your current insurance information to get started, and in just minutes, you'll be able to see quotes for the exact same coverage you currently have. And it's free to use. I checked it out myself, and that's exactly what I did. Plugged in my information, got the good news, bad news, because I was maybe paying too much for a long time. But the good news was I could save money. And that's exactly what Gabby customers do. Gabby customers save $961 per year on average, and they'll never sell your info, so no annoying spam or robocalls. Put your policy to the test just like I did and get better insurance with Gabby. It's totally free to check and there's no obligation. Go to Gabby.com/nochill. That's Gabby.com/nochill. Gabby.com/nochill. Save money. Get informed.
The rules was being changed to accept this
I'll go with
group,
that. Yeah.
This
I'll
group of that. People. Because, you know, when you start looking back and you're like, why was there... Where was this change at? And then you see the change is coming when Tony Kukoc is coming in.
Yeah.
And they're trying to shift and make it, you know, and you can see the evolution of the rules being pulled off and no hand checking and what's coming into the league.
And they wanted them scores to score.
Yeah.
Because people wanted to see scores score. And, I mean, you're probably one of the best in the game, and they couldn't have you being fouled and hit every single time down the floor. So... They want to see points on the board, but again, it was definitely for the European players to come overseas. And I think it was fun because if we could get FIBA involved in the NBA, which they eventually did, you see how the basketball has exploded worldwide.
Well, what the Dream Team had was that you had Magic, Bird, MJ, right? And, you know, Magic and Larry were the perfect guys to take the NBA forward with the rivalry that you had, the number of times you played in the finals, but... The NBA in the 80s needed that because it was going in this path where it was just like really unorganized and wild because guys were just, like you said, happy to be there. Like, I'm a pro basketball player. I'm getting this money, more money than I imagined I'd have, but there was no discipline or organization.
Well, you know what? Magic and Bird kind of opened that door, but it couldn't survive without a Michael Jordan, without a Charles Barkley. You needed them creative high flyers to come in and show because that's what fans, you know, I've been overseas and did a couple of camps in the late 80s and 90s, and now they talked about, can you dunk? Can you dunk? Can you shoot far out? You know, kids want to see that, and you know, Bird or Magic weren't dunking a lot. They weren't fast. Those two were grounded players, but now you see Michael Jordan. You see Charles Barkley, who was probably one of the biggest leapers in the game that we've known at a small forward. You see them coming to fruition, and fans get a chance to experience them too.
You know, it's funny because me remembering that team, it was more like a video game. Our video game lineup came to life. Unlike the All-Star game, that was cool. But now you get to put your, like, you got Jordan, Magic, and Bird on the same, like, you know, you sit there at home, like, oh my God. Because, yeah, you get Jordan and Bird on the same team, but Magic was never there. Now Magic, and you get to, you know, and that's, when you're a kid, that's what excited. Because, you know, we're coming from, you know, I didn't realize Magic was older, Bird was on his last limbs. That didn't register in my, the concept of, I can put Magic, Bird, and Jordan in the same lineup on my video game. That's what that was. But you, it was just one of those things where you had this dream thing, and that's what from the kid standpoint, that's what we loved about the Dream Team. Like that's it. We didn't. I don't know if Bird scored 8 points. I don't even know if Bird. Like I had to research and realize that Pippen led that team in assists. But you got to put the matchups all in one. It was like, yes. I remember going to my, you know, going to buy the jerseys, and I'm trying to figure out which three I want to buy. My dad said, you can get three. Like, oh, man. The three. You know, and that was the 92 dream, you know, for a kid at that age.
And the video game explosion, like you said, that's where all the money came from. Yeah, sorry.
But it wasn't coincidence. It was marketing. That's what you mentioned, David Stern. That's what he did was he saw that I have this thing. I have all this talent. How do I organize it, make this a professional thing? Because they had to compete with baseball, football, you know, and NBA really had to make a name for itself.
Let me ask you a question. Would you say, what is America's sport now? Because it used to be baseball. What would you say, Gil and Mike, is America's sport right now?
Real quick, I know how Gil's thinking. NFL still gets the TV views. We all know that. Mm-hmm. But I think culturally, basketball is that because we see it all over the world, which it started in the
So US. If you were to put a football, baseball, basketball on the ground and you ask 10 kids and you let one in the room and just pick any ball you want to, you think how many
out of... To play basketball.
They're going
to
pick basketball.
Yeah.
And also, who do they
know? How many would
you
say? Huh? 6 out of 10? 7 out of 10? How many would you say?
Just random kids that just see sports.
Just 10 kids that see sports. They see it all. And you let them in the room and say, hey, you got to pick one of those balls.
I'll say 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10, okay.
The reason is the ball bounces.
Yeah. That's a good point.
The ball bounces. Yeah. So they can, you know, it's one of those things that they're going to gravitate to. They can, you got to remember, it's life sports.
Yeah.
I don't have to be on a team to actually play this sport. Football. You can't just go, you know, by yourself and say, oh, I'm going to be a running back and I'm gonna throw the ball to my... You can't do the basketball. You can go and work on your... So it's the game of youth.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go play pickup... When was the last time you heard somebody say we're going to play, you know, flag football and the pickup game on Sunday?
That's true.
You know, you don't even have to be a basketball player to go play pickup game next Sunday. You just say, hey, y'all, let's go out there and run up and down and do what we do and have fun. So it's life sports, but I think... Football and baseball gets that recognition because their arenas are just bigger.
Yeah.
They're just big arenas. Football, if football was played every single day, I think the value goes down. You know, the fact that we play all the time, and I think the excitement is like 80s, you were forced to be a fan of certain teams. Now you have TV where you can be like, all right, I'll watch a little bit of Iverson, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You don't really have to be a fan of one or two.
Yeah.
You get to watch everybody now. Back then you like, hold on, wait, hold on, let me pick my team. You know what I mean? you can't have more than you got one team. You got one team and you was a diehard of that team no matter what. Me, I was Orlando Magic. When Penny got there, because he beat the Bulls.
Yep.
He beat my dad's team. Yeah, I'm Penny Hardaway everything. I was 25. I was number 25 in high school because that's what his number was in Memphis. You know, I couldn't get the number in in Arizona because they was retiring Steve Kerr's number, so I had to go with zero. You know what I mean? When I went to Orlando, and I was like, I want zero, but no, this is a dream. I get to wear One. I'm going to wear one for Penny Hardaway. It was my dream when I went to Orlando. Penny Hardaway, I get the same thing. It was one of those things. And you couldn't tell me nothing about Penny.
Yeah.
There was nothing you can... When Penny and Shaq had to fall out, bye, Shaq. bye, Shaq. It's team Penny right here. Even watching Laker games, I'm mad at Shaq because Penny, like, oh, look. And I'm a Laker fan. Like, oh, see, he's just giving him the ball. All right, we're going to take this championship. But then,
yeah. And plus, another thing, Gilbert, I think with basketball, baseball, football, is when it rains, you can always go indoors with basketball. That's the one thing.
You're talking about individuals, but I think the greatest thing that you were a part of and the greatest thing that the 80s had was a rivalry, the Celtics-Lakers rivalry. Which you could put that on TV all the time. It didn't matter. If you weren't in Boston or LA, and I've seen Philly, I did want to watch those games though. Because the rivalry, that's a thing I feel like is just missing right now. A true rivalry like that.
I agree with that.
Racism played a big part. Because you have Los Angeles,
Black team.
Free,
yep.
Nonchalant, and then you have Boston, white, racist. But they battled on the court as players.
Yes.
There was no race here. There was no race here between the players. No matter what was said on the court, the players wasn't racist.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you get to actually root. You get to root for it. You get to just, yes, get up. Like, and that was... It seemed like, to me, racism was between these two teams. And that's why that rivalry was so big for America. And every time the Lakers won, it's like, it was a little less racism in the world. Yeah. A little less racism in the world. And that's how I grew up feeling. Like, Lakers won.
I'm just going to throw a disclaimer out there. That's a broad brush that he just labeled those cities like that. So no offense to anybody.
Boston, come on. Saying,
even though in Boston, and if you were from Boston, whether you were black or white, when the Lakers came to town, it was all in unison. You hated the Lakers.
You hated the Lakers, yeah.
You hated it. And it's the same thing. Out in L.A., white or black crowd, you hated the Celtics. So they came together. But again, it was like Gil said, when we got on the court, we didn't see color. You just competed because they had this green shirt
on. It's not Celtics green.
Back then, it was you hated green and you hated yellow
exactly.
And purple. But that's why it seemed like it was what the world needed at that time, not knowing it.
Yeah.
Because you gotta remember. The two stars shaking hands, hugging, rooting for each other, it let you know this is bigger than just black and white.
Yep.
That's why I say these two are always connected forever. When you say Bird, you got to say the other one. When you say Mount Rushmore and you're trying to replace, either you replace them both, or you keep them both. You can't say one without the other because it was the yin and the yang of the world. Even though no one ever admits it, it was like one of those things where you went to school after a Laker win, it was like, okay, I ain't gonna be called the N-word today. Cool.
Let me ask you this, Gil. Do you think that Bird could have been successful in L.A. and Magic successful in Boston?
I think Magic could have been successful in Boston. See, I don't know about Bird. You gotta remember.
Yeah.
He has to come in with you guys. You gotta remember. Now you're talking about a fast group and a half court player. Mm-hmm. It would have worked because now you got him and Kareem. It could have worked. You gotta remember, Magic over there is still gonna speed them up.
I don't see it.
You got to remember, the guard is going to...
I think they'd have figured it out eventually.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Who's going to figure it out faster?
First, yeah, that's it. I just didn't see it working.
Who's going to maximize the talent around them? Was Bird going to... You got to remember, Bird is Bird, and everyone is filling it. Magic is filling in the spots.
Yeah.
So there, he gets to make those guys a little bit better, a little bit flashier. So it changes the dynamic, but you got to remember, you're still talking about two masterminds.
Yeah.
They figure it out because you're going to adjust to their skill level. But if Bird's here, you guys are not as fast.
Yeah. And you know what? I really do believe this. The basketball gods put them two players right where they were supposed to be. They couldn't have been anywhere else and they've been as successful. But I do agree with you. When you talk Magic Johnson and you're talking basketball, you've got to say Larry Bird. If you're talking Larry Bird, you've got to say Magic Johnson.
I would say both of those guys were so good you could build, they changed the franchise wherever they would go.
No, that's yeah.
That's just figure it out.
That's what me growing up, it was just one of those things where it was two cities that were totally different. But the same
culturally,
but it was the same goal on the court. We beat each other's ass
and win championships.
The best man wins.
Yep.
And that's why that rivalry today still lives on.
I think we talked about
Bulls and Bulls in Detroit. Nobody gives a fuck about them two teams playing. Like
I actually like that.
Today? Nobody pays attention to the Bulls Detroit. Today
they gotta get the talent back
today,
up there.
Today, Lakers versus that is still a big rivalry. That's why I said you're not letting it go. There's no letting it go. We hate them. They hate. We're gonna keep it forever. If they play right now and Lakers win a championship, they're gonna mention they have two more than Boston. They're gonna mention it.
Yep.
You're gonna mention it.
So what rivalry do we need today to get today's game to at least come up through equivalent to that? You got that, and that is important. You make a good point, Mike. You have to have a rival.
Can't.
You don't see one that can be made?
No.
I do.
Who?
New York and L.A. Brooklyn. Brooklyn's got it in the East right
He's
now,
cute,
right?
He's cute, isn't he? We like Mike.
Eastern Conference, Western Conference is naturally going to be like that.
That's what I'm saying. The world is different now.
Yeah.
The world is different now. It's not the same. That's why I like most of the things in the 80s are still iconic today. Mm. It was a different time. It was a different era. You know, like you're talking about boundaries being set and broken for the world to be the way it is. Mm-hmm. So you can't give a rivalry to today's world when everyone is free, when people were fighting for that right. You know, so like you look at a rivalry now, you got to remember, to be a Laker, you had to understand what being a Laker was. Same thing with Boston. Same thing with Jordan and the Bulls. Well, there's no loyalty now.
And you know what, Gil, that's what I try to tell players now. The young players with the Lakers, every now and then, this was last year before COVID hit, but you see them, and you know, they put that Laker uniform on, they don't understand the significance of that. You don't understand. You have to understand the significance of that jersey. If you put that jersey on, you represent not just you and your family, you represent the city of Los Angeles. And these guys go out there and play, and when they play the Celtics, it's like, oh, no, the fans see something different.
Yeah.
The fans see something different.
and that's why, I you know, you got to tell the older, you got to judge them different, because they're never going to understand the battle that had to be fought for these up here. Mm-hmm. This was war for this. What you guys doing now is basically luxury.
Yeah.
And that's why the
Do you think LeBron gets it? I do.
No, he understands he understands the past very well.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, even with him though, he doesn't have a there's no rival team.
Mm-hmm.
See, we give him a rival team if whoever's the champion that year. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to remember, for him, you're building just to beat him.
Yeah.
You're not building to beat the Lakers. You're building to beat LeBron. If you can beat LeBron, you have a better chance at winning the championship. Yeah. So you don't really have that team rival. It's not a team rivalry anymore. It's a player rivalry.
How can
rivalry.
We get that back?
Was actually going to say, to answer your question, it's player rivalries.
You got player rivalries.
Yeah.
You don't have team rivalries because the money's different. You can't build dynasties because
that's the key.
You got to remember, with dynasties, great players have to sacrifice big.
Yeah.
You know, so when you look at dynasties and how Golden State was formed, the best player was undervalued at the time because he was injured. So you have a max superstar the guy who changed the world now for shooting and how you play this game was getting paid $60 million. So now when free agency comes up and Kevin Durant is, you're like, oh, wait, hold on. I can max Kevin Durant out. Now you can max him out and it doesn't affect your cap because the player who's supposed to be maxed out is making pennies on a dollar compared to his his ability. You know what I mean? If Steph was already maxed, Kevin can't come. You know, so there, during Dynasty, Bulls Dynasty, Jordan was underpaid. You know, so you have all these underpaid players, and that's how you can keep bringing on assets.
And that's what wins championships to me, though, Gil, and I think that's the key. And that's why it was so devastating for me. Again, yes, I know you want to get your value as a player, but for Kevin to lead Golden State, that right there could have been the dynasty that they continue to build.
We're different than, you know, 80s and 90s. And the reason is we're under the pressure of chasing you guys. But we don't have the luxury of longevity of being That's on that true. Same team.
Yep.
So what ends up happening is you're like, all right, you know, this guy has four rings and he had four rings by his sixth year. Mm-hmm. I got zero. I'm a free agent. They're talking about, you know, I'm not good enough to win a championship by myself. I gotta go. I gotta go build. And then now if I don't like you personally,
yeah.
I don't need to be here.
Yep.
You guys are better without me? Well, fucking fine, I'm out. You know what I mean? I don't take this shit. You know? and that's what ends up happening. Yep. The money is so big, I don't have to like you.
Yeah.
You know, if it was everyone equal, you're talking about Michael Jordan making $4 million, who are you to say you don't like me? Maybe you'll sit your ass back down and put them weights up.
On the end of the bench.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? You know, when one's making this much, you know, so it's one of those things where I don't have to stay on this team. If you don't want to put players around me, I'm going to go find a guy who's willing to do it.
You know what, Gilbert, I'm glad you make that point because toward the end of my career, in 90 I played and I finished up, Dr. Buss took me out to dinner and took my wife and I. We went out and had a nice dinner in Beverly Hills. And at the end, I was like, okay, something is coming up. He goes, Coop, I got three things for you. I said, yeah. He said, you know what, we're trying to keep winning championships and we just think you're too old. And he goes, he says, I'm going to let you pick one. Mm-hmm. He says, we can either trade you, we can cut you, or you can retire, and I'll give you a job in the front office. Gilbert, I sat there that night, and I was thinking, my wife, and he says, you don't have to answer now, but you got to answer me in like a couple of days. So I go home with my wife, and I'm sitting there thinking, and I go, you know what? I don't want to be cut, because I've always felt that whatever team, and it just happened to be the Lakers, I want to finish my career with one team. I didn't want to be traded because trading to me would be like, okay, I go to another team, yeah, I might make some money, but now I got to come back and do what you said, tear all that down with another team. Mm-hmm. Everything I've helped build, I got to tear it down. So I opted to retire, and I went overseas to play. And doctor, so when I finally told him, I said, Doc, I'm going to retire and go, you know, I said, can I go overseas and play? And I went over where Danny Ferry and Brian Shaw were playing with Il Messaggero in Rome. And I went over there, and fortunately, I was able to get paid from there. But when I came back, I only played 1 year. He said, when you get back, Coop, as soon as you get back, come to my office. So I get back, I go to his office, and he has a 5-year contract for me working as, and this is a true story. You know how they have that position now called special assistant to the general manager? Mm-hmm. I was the first one to have that.
Oh, wow.
Like, what the fuck is special assistant? What, you know, and Jerry says, Coop, Jerry West was our general manager. He says, Coop, all you got to do is just be here and learn and listen. Listen and learn. I said, you sure don't have to get you no donuts or no paper in the morning, stuff you do as a rookie to other vets. He said, no, just learn. So that was probably one of the biggest experiences I had that I really defined me as a basketball player for my loyalty, as you said, to the game. I could have left in San Antonio, Boston, Philadelphia, and the Clippers were my agent would tell me, these are teams that want you, Kobe.
You never would have gone to Boston.
And never would have went to the Clippers. So there were only two choices. But no, so I chose to do that. But I agree with you. That loyalty of wanting to be part of something special and not think about I. It's about we. And I think that was the most important lesson I learned through that.
But the loyalty was both ways, though.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's not like you woke up in the morning and looked on the, you know, you looked on your phone and you've been traded. Yeah.
That would have been devastating.
You know, halfway through a trip, you know, you're talking about, you know, a guy who, and we have to say, Buss understood.
Very much so.
He understood people.
Very much so.
He understood business. He understood evolution, because just like that is, hey, listen, we got the three options.
Yeah.
Knowing what option you're going to take. Mm-hmm. You got to remember, he knows what option you're going to take. You know?
Now that you say that, I have a feeling.
You know what
that,
option. Yeah. You are a Laker. Yeah. You are here. This is your, you know, so I know where you're going to come. And that's the reward. And there's only a few of those.
Right.
There's only a few of those left. And as players, you know loyalty, and that's when you're willing to be loyal back. You know, time after time right now, we look at the stories. Okay, they did that to him. Oh, they did that to him? Scratch that off my list. Yeah. You know, you got to remember, even back then, we'll call.
Exactly.
Hey, man, hey, how did you like it over there? How'd you like that coach? Oh, man, he don't like, all right, well, scratch him off the list. Like, and we do that. We do that. We put out our checks. We try to figure out who's who, what's what. You know, like right now, I can say, you know, like, you know, the Mavs, you know, Cuban comes from that loyalty cloth. You know, the fact that he's still maxing out Dirt when everybody's like, he's done. He's like, well, as long as he wants to play, he's maxed. It's my guy.
And Popovich.
You know, Barrera, he signs Barrera one more deal for a championship that was won 8-9 years ago. I'm still rewarding you for it.
You know what, Gilbert? I really do mean this. Why are we doing No Chill podcast? You should have your own TV show, man. Like Oprah or something like that. Hey, come in. No, seriously, it should be a sports show. You're very good, man.
I'm learning. You gotta learn. You got, but that's what I'm saying is, I can only move forward on. You gotta remember, you guys are the most professional group. Nobody's gonna ever say it.
Thank you, sir.
80s is the most professional group. So if you want to learn mannerisms, you have to watch.
Yeah.
You know. So after the Laker game, I can watch ESPN and Charles Barkley. No, I want to see. Because you're gonna be politically correct, you're gonna be edgy, but not too edgy. So you get to learn the cadence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You get to learn the cadence of how basketball is taught and talked about.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So right now, it's even though you know I can sit here, you got Charles Barkley style. You're trying to grab as much information as you can on how to keep moving forward. And you know, I always said like 80s. You know, it's the most professional. It's the most professional group, hands down. Because
so, listeners, you listen. You heard it first here from Coop about this guy right here. When this show come about, give me a little bit of credit.
I got you.
There's a lot of praise going around right now, and I want to do this. I want to give. They say give you your flowers while you're living, right? This man was Defensive Player of the Year in 1987. Think about that. You had Larry Bird in his peak. You had to check him. You had Michael Jordan, young MJ, 87 MJ. That was your assignment on a nightly basis, and you got acknowledged for that season. So you guys are one of the best defenders of your era.
But you know what, Mike? The thing about that is those two were definitely the hardest, but they were actually the easiest, because players without the basketball are your fearful ones, and Larry and Michael without a basketball could still score. But you got to remember, I came up with George Gervin, I can't finger roll, Dr. J. The hardest player, or one of the hardest I ever had to guard, and I don't know, you probably know it. Remember Andrew Toney? Andrew Toney went to Southwest Louisiana. He was on Philadelphia Sixers 83 team when they won the championship.
They called this guy the Boston Strangler because this guy could score, man. Andrew Toney was a flat-out scorer. He ended up rupturing his Achilles and never came back from it. But thank you for that, Michael. But, you know, there were so many great players. You forget about David Thompson, Dale Ellis. I mean, just to name a few. Dennis Johnson in his own. He had a lot of great players. Alex English.
Drexler.
Clyde Drexler. No, sometimes Clyde was a force, too.
No, I'm saying, like, because he was changing from what? The one to the two sometimes.
Yeah, but it didn't matter because you had to catch him on the wing, man. Clyde was almost like Dr. J flying with his afro flying back. But you had a lot of great players that I had the opportunity and the ability to guard.
Because you got to figure that out. I think the other thing was that the modern athlete was coming with like Dominique, another guy from that era. But with Jordan, you had to approach things differently.
You know who was another tough one? And believe it or not, Spud Webb. Spud was hard to guard because when you got down here, he almost Spud was tough to guard, man. He was and could score on any given night on anybody.
You know what? I'm glad you went with someone no one knows. And this used to be our argument why we argue with media about lists. Your list isn't our list. You can tell us who the best offensive guy is. The players know because they got to guard it.
Yep.
So your top players in a category, and you ask the people who had to guard these guys, they're like, nah, he was okay. Yeah, he averaged 30, but the hardest person I had to guard was this guy right here. And you don't even know him. and day in and like, so when, you know, when you see MVP voting and all of this, we look at the list sometimes like, oh, they got it.
Yeah.
You know, then that's you got it wrong. Okay, you got it right. And we do that. And that's why I was like, the media, you guys look at the game from a whole different standpoint versus players. That category, best player, should be done by the players.
Yeah.
They're going to give you the truth on who is an MVP because we understand a great team and a great player or someone who has to will a team to even compete. You know, we understand it because we have a game plan. We have a game plan to say, are we going to double this guy, let these guys beat us because they are irrelevant. So that means this guy has to play one against five, basically.
Yep. Yep.
Versus this guy's like, well, we don't have to double him tonight. Boom, boom, boom. Because I remember, and this is where I was like, I thought he was crazy when he said it. But it ended up happening the way he mentioned it. We're playing Miami, Shaquille O'Neal. Kwame Brown says, we're in the game plan, and coach says, all right, listen, when Shaq catches on a block, we're going to come big to big. All right, everyone dumps down. Kwame says, we're not the double. I can hold him off. Right? I can hold him off. Don't worry.
Kwame Brown says
yes. And he says, all he's going to try to do is try to out-muscle me. That ain't working here. Right? So we're sitting here like, what? For the most part, he had Shaq under control for us actually not to double. We had to double when the other bigs, but because of Kwame's brute strength, he held Shaq to those first three dribbles where I can just dig down versus 1 pound, I'm dunking. We're playing Toronto. And Eddie Jordan's, what's his name, was like, all right, Kwame, you're going to guard Chris Bosh, you know, play him straight up. Whoa, no, we're going to have to double that Chris Bosh.
Kwame said that?
Yeah. This is before we knew what Chris Bosh was.
Yeah.
And he said it. No. We're going to have to double this Chris Bosh. He's the real deal. Mm-hmm. We just didn't double Shaq. And you're talking about doubling Chris who? Man, get the hell out of here. Sure enough. Dunk it. Step back like, wait, what is this? Like, where did this guy come from? Like, but the player is saying it. The player is telling us, like, yo, no, double him. Yeah. Trust me, he's going to give me a hard time because he knows he's too fast. He's too skillful. I can deal with this brute strength. This guy is harder for me than this guy, and this guy is all world.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand that until after we played Chris Bosh, what it really meant.
that, man. I ain't never having nobody come double. I got you until you show me. I don't care who it is.
There we go.
And that was the thing, though, because Coach said, I'm not doubling no Chris Bosh until Chris Bosh finished that game with 40-something. And we're sitting here like, what?
Well, I tell you what, if I was guarding, I'd have fouled out.
Yeah. He'd have got that 40 on somebody else.
And that was the thing. It was like, that was the first time I understood that there is a matchup that just...
Some players can't deal with.
You just can't deal with.
Unorthodox.
And there's some guys that they're all world to the world, but not to you. And it's like, oh, yeah. No.
One thing I love about it is that Kwame, he knew what he was dealing with. You know,
that's what I said. But it was one of those times where, you know, you're trying to understand, you know, what a player's coming from and trying to, you know, and when he said it, it just didn't make sense. Like you're talking about Shaquille O'Neal and, you know, who he is and what he's built, and then you're talking about this young guy and you're a young guy. It should be easy not realizing this is a whole nother realm of a player that was too fast for him. He couldn't use his strength to stop it. It was just different. And I always, from that standpoint, it was like, I have to look at it different too now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this guy, he probably averages 4 points. But when I stick him, he gets 20 points.
Yeah. That's like the Larry Bird scenario for me. Like I said, easy to guard Larry because I knew kind of what he was going to do. But now I'm guarding Andrew Toney, who's about 6'3", 6'4", a little bit more athletic, a little bit stronger, a little bit more deceptive. So I understand where he was coming from. But in good defensive players' defense, you never say you can't guard him. You just deal with it.
But the physical thing, you can understand that's the challenge when somebody's got that first step. The thing about Bird that is what I want to know about is when he's so skilled like that. Yeah, he was 6'7", but he threw every ball fake at you. He called the shot, had the quick high release. That's the challenge. He comes with the complete skill set.
So those are the players. Ones that gave me a hard time, but players that were fundamentally sound. Had great footwork, reverse pivot, forward pivot. Could do things like that. Could do things without the basketball. I know when Larry gave the ball up, I knew my work really had to start then because I had to concentrate on boxing him out. I knew if he was going to find his way to the basketball, and it wasn't necessary to score, it was to pass the ball to Parrish. One thing Larry said to me, he never did any sugar honey iced tea talking. He just kind of like played. But this one time he said, came down and I'm playing him. This is 1987. We're playing for the championship. And he goes, Coop, I'm about to wear your ass out. So I'm locked in on him now. And this the basket behind me and I'm here. And Robert Parrish comes down and sets a pick. And I was hard to set a pick on. So I knew I was going to get through it. But Larry takes me in. He comes off this pick and he comes off right about the elbow. Dennis Johnson threw him the basketball. And Kareem steps up. So Larry catches the ball, and I'm right behind him. And he catches the ball, and he goes up. I said, I'm getting ready to smack this shit. He goes up. Kareem is there. My hands are there, and I'm like this. I don't know how this guy got the ball to Robert Parrish, but he throws it to Parrish for a pick-and-roll play. Parrish gets the ball, slam dunk. Boston goes up. The fans are going crazy. He goes, I told your ass. And to me, that might seem like something simple, but that's the greatness of a great player in Larry Bird. And from that point forward, we never talked. He never said anything else, but it was just the fact that he wore my ass out on that play. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing I respected a lot about him. Larry could score with or without the basketball. One of the greatest plays you ever seen him play, Boston versus Detroit Pistons. Johnny Moses calling the game. Larry jumps out of bounds, steals the ball. Johnny Moses, Bird steals the ball, Bird steals the ball. He throws it to DJ. DJ lays it in. They beat Detroit. Though that kind of player there, that's the ones that you like to see and like to play against.
And that was the thing, really, I think the Lakers got the last word in the rivalry winning because things for the Celtics fell short, right? His body kind of broke down. And then when they had help, it was that we were seeing the Len Bias moment. Like, that's where his help was going to come.
You know what? That is such a tragic accident that happened with that young man, Len Bias. And we had a friend of his, Adrian Branch, close friend of his, and he told us about that night when all that went down. I'm going to say this, and I've never said this before. Had Boston got Len Bias
and they played against us, they were able to beat our ass every time. That's how good Len Bias was.
That was the crazy thing. That's Len where the Bias future of the franchise was going to go.
Was a better player, well, just as good a player as James Worthy. Do you remember Len Bias?
Nah. I mean, I know the name and, you know, heard the stories.
This kid could jump out the gym, could shoot a jump shot, run the floor, block shots with the best of them. Had Boston got him, it would have been hard for us to beat them. I don't think we'd ever beat them again. Him, Larry Bird, Robert Parrish, and Kevin McHale. It would have been, that probably would have went down as the best front line four players that you could ever have in the history of the game.
Okay. How is Boston set up to even get that pick?
That's Red Auerbach. Red Auerbach. Shaking and moving,
man. That was a trade
coming
off that 86 team people said was the greatest team ever.
Yeah, that's like, how do you, like when you hear those
players and the draft.
Because he knew that these guys are aging. I need to infuse young talent. We saw him, and it's like, this guy's going
to
change the
game. And he had made that move 2 years before. He had traded to where he was able to get that first, got the number one pick, man.
But it was recognizing what we talk about is the younger, modern skill player was coming that had the physical. He had the 40-inch vertical. He had the 6'8", you know, in the wingspan, in the jump shot. Like you said, he was refined.
Gilbert, this guy could jump up and, you know, the white line at the top, could hit both hands.
Take one step, jump up.
And Len Bias was a terror, man. This guy was
good. Just think of how differently it would have been for Boston history in this rivalry, because they would have
think they would have beat us more than we beat them with them. They were good.
Yeah, see, that's, you know, one of those guys that's not in my era for me to, you know, I know the name and heard the stories, but because I'm not there, I wouldn't know how good or how he would have changed history.
Today's player, who would he be? I think he would be equivalent to like LeBron.
Oh.
He doesn't have the handles like LeBron, but his whole package and game, he was about 6'9", about a good solid 220, 230. Oh. And he was built nice too, man. Nice big shoulders on him.
Oh, so he was that generational player that was coming up.
Oh, yeah. And he could he was a little limited as far as his ball handling, but if you got him in the post, one or two bounce dribbles, you weren't going to stop him because he was jumping up over you. And he could kill that little 15-footer. That was a layup to him.
How good was the Big O?
Oscar was probably, he was Magic Johnson on a much smaller level. But that dominating force, Oscar was very, very good. The thing about Oscar is that he was only right-handed. Mm-hmm. And back then, people weren't, you know, had the scouting reports to where, hey, take away this guy's right. But you could still take Oscar's right away, but he was going to get there. He was Magic Johnson before Magic.
Okay, because I was looking at the numbers, and I'm like...
He was Magic Johnson before Magic.
Because you got to remember, back then, assists was harder.
And he was 6'6", too, so he was a freak. He was a freak back then, too.
Was
Oscar was about a good 6'5", but about a 230, 240, because he was like... But it didn't look like he was fat. He was just a big player. Everything.
Yeah, that's what I would say his advantage was his strength. Yeah. Before guys were hitting.
Because, you know, I'm looking, because, you know, I'm thinking, you know, 10, 15 assists back then. What is that now? 4, 5 real
assists? Three-pointers.
Not even about that. You got to remember, we're lenient today in assists.
Yeah.
Like, I looked at some games, and they'll pass it to the guy at half court. He'll get it. Two dribbles, spin, step back, and they'll give that guy an assist. Yeah. I'm like, that's not an assist. That's just a fucking... pass, you know. You know, now, you know, back then assist was here,
catch
score,
it, door, yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, 15 assists back then is like 20 something now,
25
now. So it's like, that's why I said it's hard, because the rules is adapted to keep the numbers the same.
But see, Oscar was so good is that once he got into the low post and he made a turn, usually a double team was coming and he was just dumping it over the top like that. So
and we needed this, Gil. We needed some perspective on your era, because we needed somebody to defend the era.
Is it that time, Mike?
It is that time, though. That's what we're building up for, because there's some history here people got to know about. And I think you got some tricks up your sleeve.
Oh, I just got one.
Okay. I get that. One arrow to shoot.
Agent Zero, I get one arrow.
No, you get more than one.
I just got one arrow. Okay.
Okay.
Agent Zero, you being in the NBA at that particular time, I'm wondering if you were on the same wavelength as Wilt Chamberlain, how many women did you sleep with? Now, Wilt slept with 2,500 women. Now, I can't tell you if that was in one season or two seasons, but we want to know how many for you at that time when you played.
That's a first for that question.
It was different. It's different because, because it wasn't a lot. Like I got fooled when I got into the NBA. I got fooled. You know, when you came into the NBA, you was like, oh, the women are gonna be cut. They didn't want no second round player. They didn't want no second round guy who sat at the end of the bench. So what ends up happening is I'm trying to be where when I go to the hotel lobby. You know, you got to remember, you were Lakers Showtime, so they outside waiting for you. There was no somebody coming for the Golden State when I was at the Golden State Warriors. No women are waiting for the goddamn Wizards.
Okay, so we know all that, but
so
we
now
we have
to go. Now I have to go to the club.
We're looking for a number.
That's what, now I got to okay. go to the club and search. I wasn't a clubber. I wasn't a clubber. You know, I'm hearing about Magic Johnson. You got to remember. All I can go off of what I hear, right? Magic Johnson don't have sex before the game. Right, imagine it. To be Magic Johnson, can't have sex the night before the game, right? So your AC Green didn't even have sex. Well, I don't want that
at all.
You know what I'm saying? So like, this is all the stories we know, right? So I'm trying to build to be that recognition. So my sexual experience wasn't in the 2000s, and I wish.
Okay, so what number? That's the number for that 1 year, for your best year off the court.
We're talking all NBA year.
Yeah,
not Golden State.
NBA,
you're talking about like
29. Yeah.
You're talking about my 29 average.
Oh, they said Wilt had 2,500 women. How many for you?
Different women?
I think that's what Wilt said, yeah.
Yes. Well, 25 different women, 2,500 for Will.
Probably 15.
There's only 365 days in a year.
probably 15.
Okay.
So do the math at home if you
want. Yeah, that was about that. Yeah. For that whole year, like probably 15. And it came more in the summer.
That's pretty good.
Because I'm traveling.
I'm not good. But
well,
I mean,
shit,
you low number.
Damn Magic Johnson handicapped. The story handicapped me. The night before the game, can't have sex. So no, you cannot come. Like it was, no, you know what I mean. So it kind of. So now I only have a window of teams where there's at least 2 days in between the games. You know, because
no back to back
for the year.
No, that's what I'm saying. You know, I'm the thinker. So I'm trying to figure out like the rules. You know what I mean? We're not taught. You know, we're not taught, so I'm trying to understand. Because my first year in the NBA, zero. No, my first year in the NBA is zero. I didn't I have a girlfriend.
Let's talk about your best year.
No, but I'm saying, so yeah. You got to remember, I'm trying to build up to the you're the Lakers, right? What you see, what y'all see, is not how the rest of the fucking league went. That did not. The rest of us did not have 20,000 people outside and women like coming down fire escapes and shit.
Some things they were pioneers on. Some things they were living the good life.
No, trust me. The stories, fire escape, women sneaking through. That shit did not happen to the rest of us.
That didn't happen to us.
Women waiting for us the goddamn bus. Just six dudes outside wanting autographs. That's it. You know what I mean? That was it. Signing autographs when we get off the bus. Because I was like, yo, where the women at?
So Gilbert's number is 15.
Yeah, it's about 15.
So you're way down the list.
Yeah, my highest. Yeah, my
you're
highest.
Way, way down the list. So Wilt remains the champion at 2,500.
The modern era has that too, like, going for it.
The summer, I understand. I understand some, and I understand road trips. But there was some cities. It's like, nah, I gotta focus. Like, you know, it's like, and then it's Miami. I don't want to bring sand to Miami, so I'm gonna try to find something in Miami. You know what I mean?
South Beach.
But you gotta remember, there's certain groups of teams that are just magnets.
Yep.
You know, I'm pretty sure Golden State, that's a magnet team. You know, Lakers, LeBron, that's a magnet team. Like, no, ain't nobody waiting for Utah or Denver Nuggets. Nobody's outside waiting for Rudy Goldberg. Like, come on. No, that's not going to happen here. Nothing against Rudy, but nobody's waiting for it. They ain't a bunch of models waiting for that team, bro. This is,
you never know nowadays, man. Now, not with COVID going on.
I'm pretty sure Brooklyn Nets, when they pop into town, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
They got a lot of money on that team. They got a lot of money on that team. Memphis Grizzlies, he probably got two fans out there. Cavs right now? Oh, no, nobody's out there. Man, everybody's out there, bro. They bringing their wives to those games.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I think let's get down on this. The greatest thing we got to appreciate, though, and we want to know about this, the Forum back in the 80s.
The Forum or the Forum Club?
Both.
Probably the best place in the world to be on a Laker night.
It was set better, the scene for us.
It was better than
there.
Some. Well, I was married, so I mean, I just heard you stories myself.
You can
myself,
browse.
But, I mean, I went through there a couple of times. I had my wife in my hand, you know, hand in hand. We were walking through there, but it was the Forum Club. The Forum was a very special place because, again, as Dr. Buss said, it was entertain the entertainers. So you had a lot of people coming. Michael Jackson used to come dressed as an old man. And that was fun because the only one that knew was Magic. So, you know, at the end of the game, he'd go, Coop, look across there. See the guy, the old guy in the fourth row up? That's Michael Jackson. So it was fun to kind of hear them kind of stories because he couldn't come out himself because it would be no game. But the Forum Club afterwards was like probably the hottest spot to be after, or even better than a nightclub because you had the Laker girls going through there after the game. And it was just a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
See that? Yeah.
Great times.
Like, I remember when I was in Orlando, when I got traded to Orlando, they had a club inside the arena. You're talking about, this. I'm on my, you know, ninth year. This is the first time I've ever, you know, I know the Lakers, you know, this is the first time I've heard of such a thing. Like a club.
Like a club. Music.
Like a club, yeah. Like where everyone goes after the party. I'm like, wait, what? Like, this is the best place on earth. You know what I mean? You know, but then I just got off the gun thing. I'm still not crowd free. I'm, you know, I'm trying to stay away from people. You know what I mean? So I didn't even get to enjoy the scene with the cat. I like, you know, I'm just gonna go home. But you know, you hear the stories, and I'm like, man, they really got clubs inside the arenas like that? Because in Washington, I never heard of such a thing. Mm-hmm. Golden State, I never heard of such a thing. You know, so it was just, like my experience, I told people, I said, the one thing that I regret, I didn't enjoy it to its fullest.
But you know what, Gilbert? And I say this, and the one thing that I believe in, had I not been married, I don't think I would have the success, the success that you have, man, because...
But you can be married and still experience...
No,
you can
see it. Not experience the.
You see it. That's
but,
it.
But I was saying not experience the party, but experience just the like.
No, girl, like I remember, that's I, like taking sand to the beach. Yeah. Why would I go into the Forum Club with my wife?
Okay,
no,
true.
You just
like,
no,
like me, I'm a hermit. I didn't even know New York was like this eatery place until I get. I got drafted 2001. I didn't know nothing about New York. Until 2010.
Like the night scene and all that?
Just like they have nice restaurants and all
that
stuff.
I didn't know about New York as a player until I was a head coach with the LA Sparks. Uh-huh. Then I would go out then. And that's when I found out eating places that you can go. I didn't know that because of the head coach. I mean, I didn't have to play or anything like that. So I got a chance to go out.
Okay, so you was one of them. Like you just, you know, you're sitting there excluding yourself. Like, because, you know, in the summer I didn't travel. So, you know, Atlanta, I didn't go to strip clubs, you know, so it was one of those things where I was so
trying. Strip clubs in Atlanta?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. And I coached down there for Atlanta Dream.
Oh, that's some of the best
in the world,
And I never went out down there. I was down there for 4 years.
This is a married man.
But you're married, you know?
No, I wasn't. But, well, yes, I was married then.
Listen, but I had to, I was under an impression that sacrifice.
Yes.
You know, you know, so during the season, on game day, no telephone.
Exactly.
I didn't have no cell phone. Don't contact me. If you want tickets, you know, we had a lady by the name of Sasha Jones, Miss Jones. You contact Miss Jones, don't contact me. Do it the night before.
Yeah.
You know, so I limited myself.
That's how I was.
And I just thought that's what everyone did. You know, like I knew some guys, like, no, I have teammates who, like, their thing was they club. They got a club the night before.
I had two teammates like that. They go whenever they
that's what made them successful.
No, like, these guys were bench players.
They hold on. I don't know if I ever told this story before. Funniest story ever. So, you know, we're a veteran team. We have our routine. Everyone has their routine. So, you know, as one of the captains, I gotta understand who everyone is. Mm-hmm. I gotta bridge the gap.
Mm-hmm.
So, Flip Saunders is our coach, right? Flip Saunders is our coach. So now we have an older team and a very young team. So Flip Saunders comes in and says, curfew. It's gonna be we're gonna have a curfew. Everybody in the hotel by 9:00. Oh, okay. So you got players like, nah, what are you talking about? Nah. He said, I don't even eat dinner till 10:00, right? So I go to Sam. I go to Sam Cassell, like, hey, Sam, is he serious about like being a hotel? He's like, no, he's dead serious. Like, so what is the rule? Like, be in the hotel, be in your room, no company. Like, how does this work? I've never heard of no shit like this. Mm-hmm. Like, I've heard football players do it. He was like, no, you have to be in this hotel by 9:00.
But you had curfew in college, right?
No.
Arizona.
So, you know, I'm sitting here trying to relay the message. Like, nah, bro, you got to be in the hotel. He's like, nah, man, he ain't gonna fuck up my game one. He's like, my game one, I need to do what I do to be who I am. You're not gonna take that away from me. I was like, you know what? I understand that. Because Allen Iverson used to party, that was his thing. And then when they tried to clean him up and say, no partying, eat this, it was the worst 2 weeks of his career. He didn't function like this. This is part of a mojo versus than a lifestyle. So I said, hey, Sam, listen, we're going to have to come to a happy medium, bro. And they're talking about no. I was like, bro, I'm not going to go back to these players and tell them no. You got to remember, it's you newbies versus franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot let you win. I just can't let you win. I lose the rest of this group.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's layers here. You're trying to earn our trust. We're not trying to earn yours. So you're gonna force my hand here. He was like, what y'all gonna do? You're gonna force my hand here. I have to set it. I gotta make sure everyone's getting what they're getting, bro. So you know, Sam, man, you're just gonna have to do what you gotta do. All right, fine. I said, all right, man, I didn't want to do this to the coach for the first time. All right, whatever. DG's Gentlemen's Club. Can you send 10 of your girls to this hotel? Make sure they're already in uniform. And you know what?
Hey, Gilbert, this is a true story?
Man, just for shits and giggles, we want them to be here at 9:01. Bottles and the sparkly shits on the top walking in the hotel. Okay. The strippers can come to you, right? He's like, yeah, hell yeah. I just need to see some ass and some titties. That's I just need that.
Oh, y'all are wild.
901, strippers coming through the hotel. through the hotel. Because he said be in the hotel. He didn't say we couldn't have company. So now our whole floor is a big party. All the players is happy they got, you know.
Yeah.
So we go to shoot around the next day. I've never seen someone so angry.
Coach Saunders?
Oh, he's like, you motherfucker. And I'm like, this is our first introduction to each other, other, you know, training camp. But, you know, game time. And I said, listen, we're going to win this game because this is how they function.
Yeah.
Sure enough, go out there, blow Dallas out. And I understood from his standpoint that this is my first game. Y'all mm-hmm. going to be on your best behavior. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, if you want them to perform, you have to let them be too. Right? And it was one of those things where, you know, we're trying to figure it out. But it was one of those things I'm like, ah.
Who paid for the strippers?
They did. I said, I'm not paying for no, I'm not paying for no strippers.
Trip.
If you throw 20,000, I'm not paying no 20,000 for these girls out here. Listen, I done learned my lesson at the strip club. You sitting there being convinced that they're gonna come home after they shift and you paying them their money, and then they hit you with the text talking about, yeah, I gotta take my son to school. Like, nah, you just milked me out of 10 grand. You do that one time with me, you done messed up my strip club experience. So I learned early. Telling you sweet nothing in your ear, like, yeah, I'm gonna take a hold.
Strip club knowledge 101.
I wish I could go back to that Lakers 80s team. Just it seemed
you guys had you know pretty what?
Good. We were not fun. Like that. We like when we got into town, Magic would get a newspaper, and about 8 or 9 of us would go to a movie. And we'd go to a movie. This is before the game. We'd go see a movie. He liked thriller, action, bang, bang, shoot 'em up movies. We'd go to a movie, and usually when we landed in town, it was like 7, 8, so we'd catch a 9:30. Can. After that, we get something to eat on the way in, go shoot around, have a game, and after the game, everybody would disperse and do your thing then. But before a game, never, ever before a game.
Yeah, see, that's what made me that night before the game mm-hmm. is discipline. Yep. But it was more team oriented.
Yeah.
Like now, you know, that's what I said, you got to respect. You got to respect that part of the game
mm-hmm.
because when you're saying teams and the reason that people didn't leave because you had a relationship. You had a relationship. These yeah. were friends. These was partners. Now you don't have that. Trying to get for you to go to the same dinner in a movie is pulling teeth.
It's hard, yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to say the name because he's a young guy. But he was mad at LeBron James. And this is what he was mad for. And I was like, wait, excuse me, when I heard it, he said, yeah, man, I had to do me, man. You know, he wanted to have breakfast as a team, lunch as a team, wanted to have dinner as a team. I didn't want to do all of that. I wanted to be my own man.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here like, every time I heard about the greatest teams, is that they hung out together.
Yep.
And when you're hanging out together, whatever happens on that court is left on the court
yep.
because it's a friendship. mm-hmm. You know, so if I say, yo, get that shit off the glass, goddammit, you're playing like shit, you don't take offense to it.
Yeah.
You know, because you know as a friendship, what you're saying is true. You're not saying it out of anger.
Yeah.
And that's what today's players don't understand. If you don't have a friendship off that court, everything that happens on that court becomes magnified.
Big five. And that's why we use the word constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. You have to have that in order to be a successful team.
Yeah. So. Like somebody like Draymond Green. See, he's been with Curry and Clay.
Mm-hmm.
What he said to Kevin Durant, I'm pretty sure he said it to them 100 times.
Exactly.
But they've been together so long that that's
they've been through the wars.
They're like this. That's just Draymond.
Draymond.
Yeah. That's just Draymond. Well, when KD's coming in there, he don't know nothing. There's no friendship here. You know, so when you say something, it's taken as offense.
Yeah.
You're saying, oh, you really mean that shit. Not just, you know, spoken words. Let's just see trying to rile me up and let's keep it moving. You know, and that's what I respect about the older generation, that they understood friendship equal team success.
The only one we didn't mess with was Kareem.
He didn't go to the movie.
No, Kareem never went to the movie. I mean, we tried to get. I mean, we invited him, but no. I mean, I'll catch y'all later.
Yeah, okay.
That's what it is, man. It's a team.
Yep.
And everybody's their own individual, but you come together for success.
But you know what? We knew he was gonna come play, right. So you didn't have to worry about him.
Yes, that's what I said. You know, and that's why you know, as teams, you gotta understand. Like, that's what I said. So did you guys? Okay. So what I've heard about Pat Riley. Miami. Was he actually that in LA? Did he actually control that team, or was it the team that just disciplined themselves?
Well, he started it, he initiated it, and after a while we saw that what he said would help us win, then it became internal and we got it within the team. So after a while, Rouse didn't have to do anything for us.
Okay.
We did it ourselves, but he initiated that, he instigated it. I think the biggest thing that he did for us was in the playoffs, because you gotta remember, back in the 70s, Wilt Chamberlain would come into the locker room at halftime and Bill Sharman would be coaching and Wilt would smoke a cigarette and tell him, hey, let's get this over with, come on. And he's smoking a cigarette in the locker room. Well, that's how basketball was perceived. So when we made the switch, that was a big thing that Pat Riley did, is he changed up everything. And the biggest thing he did for in the playoffs, Pat would give you your playoff information, a tape, VHS for us, but beta at the time, and our playbook. And the first time we came and he would ask us a question and nobody knew. I mean, I read mine. I was really into that. Uh-huh. But Kareem and some of the other guys, because Kareem was so good, he was like, I know what I got to do. Mm-hmm. I ain't got it. So what Pat started doing is he started putting a code word in your VHS to make sure. So you come to practice the next day and he goes, okay, Coop, you got your board. Who are the two players you guard? Oh, before you ask, what's your code word? And the code word could be at the beginning, and it could be anywhere in your little video. It usually was like 15 minutes. So you had to watch the video. And so now, if I can get you to watch the video, my work is done now. Mm-hmm. So after a while, it stopped being about the code word, because now he didn't have that. Mm-hmm. He knew that you were watching it. So that was the biggest thing he did.
Okay.
So
introduced it and then let you guys.
Yeah, and then let us go. And everybody started holding each other accountable.
And I think that's the biggest key, is holding, like, I remember I had the talk with Stan at the end of the season, right? And I said, X's and O's, you're up there.
Mm-hmm.
People, coach, you're not a player's coach. And Stan said, I know, I'm trying to work on it. And I'm sitting here like, you know, and you're trying to work on it. And he said this, when that game starts, I just, something about the game just turns me into another person.
Mm-hmm.
The competitiveness, the what's the name, and I just can't. As I said, you know, the team will run better if the leader got to be a leader.
Mm-hmm.
You're the leader. That means he's not the leader. So that means all he's doing is babysitting us. Because you're hard on us.
Mm-hmm.
That means we're not functioning as a real unit, mm-hmm. because he doesn't snap the whip. We gotta remember, we're going to war with him.
Yeah.
He's going to war with us. Mm-hmm. When he snaps the whip, we get in line. When you snap the whip, you're picking on us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I said, you know, at some point, if you want the best out of Dwight Howard, you have to let him lead.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, he's just a kid. He's not, he doesn't, you're stopping him from growing. So when people used to ask me about Dwight, I'm like, he wasn't allowed to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got to remember, if he's back there defending this hoop and I'm getting beat off the dribble, when he says, yo, fucking lock down.
Yeah.
Or get the fuck out of here. I have to listen.
Yep.
But if you're killing me and he's like, don't even worry about it, bro. Don't even worry. He's not really being a leader.
Leader, exactly.
He just don't want to do what you're doing to us.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sitting there just babysitting us and our bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just trying to keep the pressure off himself instead of saying, nah, hey, yo, stop, Turkaloot, stop that shit, Turk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Either come to play, wake up, or get the fuck off this court. And I think that's what stopped him, is he didn't get to grow into what everybody else got to grow into, because the coach was the leader. He never let the birds fly.
Well, Kareem, like, wasn't necessarily a leader. I mean, we knew he was going to do his part.
Mm-hmm.
So that role fell to Magic, and he was masterful at it. I mean, you know, and the one thing, like I said, constructive criticism, if he wasn't doing his job, I was going to say something to him, as well as vice versa, and to everybody else. So any of our rookies and new people coming in, they knew that already. So they just fell in line. So after we won our championship in 82, we go 83, 84, everybody was in line with what we were doing. That's why we were able to win in 85, get back to the finals, 87, 88, and 89.
So.
Yeah. And I tell people that too. I said, you know, who you, the media perceives as the leaders, is not necessarily
exactly.
always the leaders.
Yep.
It's not always the leaders. You know, some guys are not vocal leaders. You know, some guys are. You yeah. know, I mean, you know, it's who is respected, and the person that's respected puts in the work.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And, you know, we, you know, if you say something, okay, you know. And that's why I used to tell guys, like, yo, you're never going to hear me yell at you about shots.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be the way I am if I'm nitpicking at shots, because yeah. I would never be the score I am. So my thing is going to be, yo, you didn't shoot the ball. But I don't care where you shoot the ball, just put the shit up. You yeah. know, you know, I was one of those types. So I never yelled at players for, you know, shooting the ball. I'm just saying, if you're gonna shoot it, my thing was this, yo, you should be upset that they leaving you to come double me, work on your game.
Yeah. Magic was like he would pass me the ball sometimes and I wouldn't shoot it, I'd pass it on. He said, Coop, listen. I'm trying to get assists. If I ain't going to get it to you, I'm going to pass it. I can get it to him. I'm trying to get assists from you. So that's when I learned to start shooting the ball then, yeah, man.
You entered a three-point contest too, right?
Yeah, twice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Gil, so let's recap this whole thing for everyone to learn and learn from the era, because that's what we set out here to do today. It starts with the personnel that you have, and then there's got to be substance to it. When you have the guys that buy in, everybody's got to buy in. To be successful, that is part of the process. The style will come from that.
That's
and
the
then mark. When it, yeah, then when it's go time and it comes down to that war on the floor, you know who you have, and five rings later.
Well, that's the start of a championship. Obviously, the coach has to determine what style of play. Mm-hmm. And once they get that down, everybody has to buy into the system. And I think Pat Riley set a great stage for us. And everybody bought into the system early. You know, the fun part about Showtime, and I always tell people this, because we were a very good defensive team, too. Mm-hmm. It wasn't all about up and down offense. It was about our defense. Our defense was dictated to take away the main player's opportunity to score, and then we worked around that. So if you had an inside game, Magic wasn't a great one-on-one defensive player, but he was a good double team, and he was a big double team. He had good hands. So that was the first and foremost for us. But everybody has to buy in to whatever the coach wants to happen. If you do that, you can be successful.
There we go.
So like Golden State, we think about the offense, mm-hmm. but they were also great at defense.
Defense, yep, for sure.
Dynasties.
Yeah.
They only come around once in a generation. One of the greatest ever. Coop, thanks
Thank
for
you, coming.
Sir. Am I good now?
You real good now. You know that green shirt, Gilbert. I'm in love with you, man. Even more so. Thank you guys for having me.
No problem. Thank you very much.
For Michael Cooper, five-time champion, 1987 Defensive Player of the Year. Much respect for that. For Gilbert Arenas, all offense.
We'll
just leave it at that. I'm Mike Botticello. This has been No Chill with Gilbert Arenas. Remember, you can catch us every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Fubo Sports Network, and we'll see you next time.